Great to see everybody today. Before we get into our lesson, let me just ask you. You have problems in your life? For some of you this morning, that may be quite the understatement. Okay. The crazy thing about how many of you eat Cheetos? What a transition. Do you like that? How many of you eat Cheetos? Come on, be honest. You know the little orange things? Yeah, Cheetos. The jalapeno Cheetos? Oh, they will be in heaven, I know. They are awesome. But here's the thing. Here's the thing. I noticed not too long ago, if you buy a package of Cheetos nowadays, right on the front it says, zero trans fat. Yeah. Cheetos are healthy because there's no trans fat in them. Right? And they want you to see right on the front, Cheetos, no trans fat. Then you turn it over and you read the list of ingredients, most of which I can't even pronounce. Okay? Yellow number 6. Do y'all like the way yellow number 6 tastes? It's not on the list for potluck today. I checked. There's no yellow number 6 over there. But here's my point. Here's what we typically do, okay? We come walking into church. We tell everybody, no trans fat. I'm good. Look, I'm healthy. Here's my smile to prove it. Here's my clothes. Here's my song. We flip it over on the back and we see what the ingredients are really made of. What's really inside. And you know, what's back to Cheetos for a minute. I know potato chips are made out of potatoes that have been deep fried. Even though Doritos are like tortilla chips that have been deep fried. But really, what are Cheetos made of? You ever think about that? I don't want to think about it because I like them so much, but that's just free. If somebody has an idea what Cheetos are actually made of, don't tell me, okay? You'll probably ruin my life. But my point is simply this. We come into situations, we come to church, we come with one another, and we want everybody to see what's right. And we'll see the best. We'll see we're zero trans fat. We're good. We don't want anybody to see all the ingredients we can't pronounce on the backside. And I don't know if those issues in your life, and understand this, you're not alone. We all got them. And if we don't have them right now, we've had them, or we will have them, okay? Whether they be a family problem, maybe it's a spouse or a child who's not faithful to God. Maybe it's a relationship that's falling apart or has completely fallen apart that just eats on us. Maybe it's a financial problem. Maybe you've lost your job. Maybe you don't have any income. Maybe you got an income, but you got way too much month for the income to make it to the end of. Maybe it's like getting close to that time when you know everybody else is supposed to retire and you're sitting back going, there ain't no way. I'm going to work till I die. And it presses on you, and it causes you to suffer. It causes you to doubt. It causes you to wonder. Because in life, we have all these problems, and sometimes they come at us. Sometimes they're medical. The doctor comes in and gives us news. We don't. We slip. We fall. We break something. And all of a sudden, now we got to do something different than we hadn't expected. And that costs more money, and that costs more time. And it all just comes piling up, and it looks like this humongous wall of problem in front of us, and there's no way over it. There's no way under it. We just beat our heads up against the wall going, how in the world am I ever going to get through it? Been there? Yeah, we all have. And if you have, and if you haven't, if you're sitting there today going, oh, I never have any problems, everything's great, life's grand, then you got a bigger problem of denial that you really need to work on, but we'll deal with that another time, all right? But understand, we live in a fallen world, we live in a broken world, we live in a painful world, and as a result, all of that comes onto us sometimes. I'm not saying everybody's life's horrible, but sometimes life gets just downright tough. And if that's the case, I'm going to give you just a little bit of encouragement this morning. If you got your Bible, turn over to Joshua chapter 6. It feels really weird to tell you to turn somewhere, someplace other than Mark, because we were there for so long. But let's go to Joshua chapter 6 this morning. That'll be our, well, we'll get there in just a minute, our text. I want to set the stage real quick. The children of Israel have been in captivity in Egypt for about 400 years or so. Moses has come, the great Redeemer. He takes them out of Egypt. They've been wandering around in the desert. God's leading them. You remember? One time they make it to the promised land. They make it to Canaan. They send the spies out. The spies come back and says, we can't go in. They're too big. They're too great. God had already promised it to them. So God says, okay, you don't want to go. We'll go on another hike. Another 40 years. They're back in the wilderness again. All right. This time, the entire generation that was afraid to go in the first time has died. And they're back at the banks of the Jordan. Again, Joshua is now in command, and Joshua sends spies again into Canaan. This time, God has said, I will give you the land. The spies come back and say, yes, God will give us the land. We can take it. Different story altogether than the first time. All right. So this whole new generation has come to the banks of the Jordan. And they're about to enter into the promised land. The land that God has promised them. But just on the other side of the Jordan River, which they have to cross, lies Jericho. And in Joshua's day, Jericho was the oldest city around. And it was oldest because it was the most well protected. It was known for its great wall. Somebody call it a wall. It's actually walls. Archaeologists have told us, have found out there's actually two walls. The outer wall was 6 feet thick and stood about 20 feet high, 20 feet tall. Okay. That was the outer wall. Beyond the outer wall was about a 15-foot space, walkway, if you will, before the second wall started. The second wall was twice as thick. It was 12 foot thick and stood 30 feet tall. So understand, if you were lucky enough to make it through the first wall, you'd end up at a choke point between the first wall and the second wall, and then you'd have to get over the 30 foot wall. It was considered to be impenetrable. And to this point in history, no one had ever breached those walls. No one had ever even hardly attempted, because it would be suicide, and they knew it. So let's find out what God does. This great wall, this great massive fortification stood in front of Israel. Let's listen to the story, starting in chapter 6, verse 1. Now Jericho was securely shut up because of the children of Israel. None went out and none came in. And the Lord said to Joshua, see, I've given Jericho into your hand, its king and the mighty men of valor. You shall march around the city, all you men of war. You shall go around the city once. This you shall do 6 days. And 7 priests shall bear 7 trumpets of ram's horns before the ark. But the 7th day you shall march around the city 7 times. And the priests shall blow the trumpets, and it shall come to pass when they make a long blast with the ram's horn, and when you hear the sound of the trumpet, that all the people shall shout with a great shout, then the wall of the city will fall down flat. And the people shall go up, every man straight before him. And Joshua, son of Nun, called the priests and said to them, take up the ark of the covenant, and let 7 priests bear 7 trumpets of ram's horns before the ark of the people. And he said to the people, proceed and march around the city, and let him who is armed advance before the ark of the Lord. So it was when Joshua had spoken to the people that the 7 priests bearing the 7 trumpets of ram's horns before the Lord advanced and blew the trumpets, and the ark of the covenant of the Lord followed them. The armed men went before the priest who blew the trumpets, and the rear guard came after the ark, while the priest continued blowing the trumpets. Now Joshua had commanded the people, saying, you shall not shout or make any noise with your voice, nor shall a word proceed out of your mouth until the day I say to you, shout. Then you shall shout. So he had the ark of the Lord circle the city, going around it once. Then they came into the camp and lodged in the camp. Joshua rose early in the morning, and the priests took up the ark of the Lord. The seven priests bearing seven trumpets of ram's horns before the ark of the Lord went on continually and blew with the trumpets. And the armed men went before them, but the rear guard came after the ark of the Lord, while the priests continued blowing the trumpets. And the second day, they marched around the city once and returned to camp. So they did 6 days. But it came to pass on the seventh day that they rose early, about the dawning of the day, and marched around the city 7 times in the same manner. On that day only, they marched around the city 7 times. And the 7th time it happened, when the priests blew the trumpets, that Joshua said to the people, "Shout, for the Lord has given you the city. Now the city shall be doomed by the Lord to destruction, it and all who are in it. Only Rahab the harlot shall live, she and all who are with her in the house, because she hid the messengers that we sent. And you, by all means, abstain from the accursed things, lest you become accursed when you take of the accursed things and make the camp of Israel accursed and trouble it. But all the silver and gold and vessels of bronze and iron are consecrated to the Lord. They shall come into the treasury of the Lord." So the people shouted when the priests blew the trumpets, and it happened when the people heard the sound of the trumpet and the people shouted with a great shout that the wall fell down flat. Then the people went up into the city, every man straight away before him, and they took the city. And they utterly destroyed all that was in the city, both man and woman, young and old, ox and sheep and donkey, with the edge of the sword. But Joshua had said to the two men who had spied out the country, "Go into the harlot's house, and from there bring out the woman and all that she has, as you swore to her." And the young men who had been spies went in and brought out Rahab, her father, her mother, her brother, and all that she had. So they brought out all her relatives and left them outside the camp of Israel. But they burned the city and all that was in it with fire. Only the silver and the gold and the vessels of bronze and iron they put in the treasury of the Lord. And Joshua spared Rahab the harlot, her father's household, and all that she had. So she dwells in Israel to this day, because she hid the messengers whom Joshua sent to spy out Jericho. Let's keep reading. Then Joshua charged them at that time, saying, "Cursed be the man before the Lord who rises up and builds the city Jericho. He shall lay its foundation with his firstborn, and with his youngest he shall set up its gates." So the Lord was with Joshua, and his fame spread throughout the country. That's the story. That's the walls of Jericho. You've heard it. You've seen it probably since you were a little kid. I know I have, some growing up in Bible class, talking about the walls of Jericho. There's a famous old spiritual song about Joshua and the walls of Jericho, and the chorus goes like this: Joshua fought the battle of Jericho. And Joshua fought the battle of Jericho, and the walls came tumbling down. And it makes everybody seem that Joshua won the battle of Jericho. But let me tell you something, church. Joshua didn't win the battle of Jericho. And Israel didn't win the battle of Jericho. God won the battle of Jericho. Joshua didn't knock the walls down. Israel didn't knock the walls down. God brought the walls tumbling down. And let me tell you something this morning. If you got a problem in your life that seems impenetrable, if you got a problem in your life that before you seems like this humongous wall, let me tell you something. God can bring it down too. But now let me say something. You know me, and you've heard me. And you know that I do not believe and I do not preach some kind of health and wealth theology that says because you believe in God, everything in your life is going to be grand. You're not going to have any problems. You're always going to be healthy. Your bank account's going to be full. You're never going to have a pimple on your face. Nothing bad's ever going to happen to you. Right? You know I don't believe that. But at the same time, I cannot believe that and still believe that my God is big enough to tear walls down in my life that caused me problems. Amen? That's right. Because I got a big God. I don't know about you. I got a really, really big God. And he can do some amazing things. But there's some things I want to point out about this story. Because it's not just a matter of me sitting back going, "God, I got this huge problem in my life. right? I can't see any end to it. I don't know how I'm going to, God help me out of it. It's not that God says, okay, sit back, do nothing, I got this. That's not what Israel did. You see, there's some key things that happened in Israel before those walls came tumbling down. Let's look at them this morning. Okay. The first thing you got to understand is if you got a problem in your life, you got something that's daunting before you, like a wall, first you got to get real with it. You got to get real and you got to look at it. And you got to say, okay, what are the facts of the situation? Well, here's the facts of Israel's situation. The fact is that wall was real, okay? That wall was big, it was thick, it was real. It's not some kind of imagery that the Bible uses to try to teach a lesson. These walls were real. Matter of fact, archaeologists have what they think they have found where the walls were and what they might have looked like. They were impenetrable. They'd never been breached by an invading army. That's a fact. Fact number two about their situation. Okay? Fact number two. Israel was a nomadic tribe of slaves. They were not military. Okay? They had no experience in invading anybody. Nobody. As a matter of fact, Israel comes to Jericho to fight, and they got no experience at all. That's just a fact. That's just a fact. Fact number three. The problem in front of them wasn't their own doing. They didn't create it themselves. It wasn't of their own construction. Matter of fact, God led them right up to it. Think about that. Here's this massive problem, and how did they end up there? God brought them to it. Now, understand, sometimes in life, and that might be the case for you, we got to get real. You got to get real about what's in front of you. You got to face a problem. First, examine the facts honestly, openly, truthfully. Denying that the problem exists doesn't solve it, just makes it worse. But then you also have to determine honestly, do I have what it takes to fix this problem on my own? And chances are, if you have what it takes to fix the problem, you already would have. So you don't possess what you need to fix it. Most of us don't on our own. We like to think we do because that's the American way. The American way is be independent. Be on your own, stand on your own 2 feet, but that's not the biblical way and that's not the godly way. If you think God calls you to be independent and on your own, you are completely wrong about the Bible. Completely. You've missed every point in it. Because from Genesis to Exodus to Revelation, the point is simply this. You have got to depend upon God. Period. You are nothing by yourself. You're nothing on your own. You can't know it all, do it all, play it all, nothing. You can't do it without God. And we got to understand, when we got problems in our life, sometimes we got to recognize we can't do it on our own. You don't get any brownie points for fixing it by yourself. Okay? But you also have to determine if the problem is of your own creation. Ask yourself, honestly, am I suffering is my problem because of simply bad choices that I've made? Are you in a mess now because you're living outside the will of God? Which happens a lot. If you're living outside the will of God and you got a wall in front of you that you can't get over, that you can't get through, and you're sitting here racking your brain, God, I can't figure out what to do. Let me tell you what to do first. The first thing you got to do is repent. The first thing you got to do is change your life from what's outside of God's will to get back inside of God's will. Okay? You can't be opposed to God and expect God to be in favor for you. But I see it all the time. I see it all the time. Oh, my kids are falling apart. My relationships are falling apart. My finances are falling apart. Are you doing what God says about your kids? Are you doing what God says about your finances? Are you doing what God says about your relationships? Well, no. Well, then what do you expect? We'll get to that. Israel knew their fact. They knew where they were at. So I'm going to go back to Joshua chapter 1. Take a look at three things real quick.
that brought the walls down in addition to God. Chapter 1, I'll just run down through with me real quick. God's talking to Joshua before they go even across the river. And I want you to hear the words that God tells Joshua. Verse 5, he says, "No man shall be able to stand before you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, I will be with you." Verse 6, God tells Joshua, "Be of good courage." Verse 7, he says, "Be strong and be courageous." Verse 9, "Be strong and be of good courage." Verse 9 again, "The Lord your God is with you wherever you go." Understand this, before Joshua walks up to Jericho, he's remembering in his mind the very promises of God. What did God tell me? He told me he would be with me. He told me to be strong. He told me to be courageous. Why? Because he's going to be with me wherever I go. That's a promise he makes. I am with you. He affirms that their courage is not based on their own effort. It's not based upon their own wisdom. It's not based upon their own power, but yet their own strength. God says, listen, you can base all of your courage and all of that on me, not on yourself. God's words to Joshua remind me exactly of the words that Jesus said to his disciples we talked about last week. And I'm with you, how long? Always, even to the end of the age. Understand this, church, God's promise of presence. God told Joshua, "I will be with you." Matter of fact, if we go on a little further in Joshua, we see that right before he goes into a battle, he looks and he sees a man and he's carrying and he's got this sword. He goes out and he says, "Are you with us or are you against us?" And he figures it out that it's a messenger from God. And the messenger said, "I am with you." Some believe this is the incarnate Christ, even pre-incarnation, showing up, telling Joshua, "I'm here and I'm fighting for you." Okay? That's God saying, "I'm here and I'm fighting for you. I'm on your side." Jesus, before he leaves the earth, says, "Listen, I am with you." How? Always. God's promise of presence with us is just as real today as it was then. Depend upon God. Know he's there for you. But after telling Joshua not to fear, to be of courage, to rely on God's power, listen to what else he tells him in chapter 1. Look at verse 7 through 9. I'll just read it all for you. The positive, "Only be strong and courageous, that you may observe to do according to all that you..." "To do all the law which Moses my servant commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right hand or to the left, that you may prosper wherever you go. This book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate it day and night, that you may observe to do according to all that is written in it. For then you will make your way prosperous, and then you will have good success. Have I not commanded you, be strong and courageous? Do not be afraid nor be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go." Understand this, sandwiched right in between all of this talk of be of courage, "I'm not going to leave you, I'm not going to leave you," is God's demand for obedience. In the middle of it all, God says basically, "Do what I say." Period. Matter of fact, he's very pointed about it. Did you catch what he said? Don't turn to the right, don't turn to the left, but what? Do what I say. Too many times we know what God has told us to do. It's pretty clear. And yet we've got within us this desire to turn right a little bit or turn left a little bit. You know, as words start coming up out of our mouths, "Well, you know, God doesn't care if I just do." What have I done? I've gone to the right. Or God doesn't mind if I don't do this. Right. I turn to the left. And the words keep coming back. Don't turn to the right. Don't turn to the left.
do what I say. Parents come in, I don't know why my kids are falling apart. I don't know why they're into drugs. I don't know why they're into sex. I don't know why they're into porn. I don't know why they're into all. No, that's not. That was the parents. Sorry. The parents are doing, and I'm saying, listen, have you turned right? Have you turned left? Well, yeah, but God doesn't care if I watch. Really? But God doesn't mind if I. Really? Maybe he does. Maybe he does. You see, God's going to ask Israel at Jericho to do some stuff that makes absolutely no sense. Matter of fact, from a military standpoint, what God asks Israel to do is just downright stupid. March around the city. Basically, here's God's plan for attack. Get the marching band. Have them march around once and play really loud and then go back to camp. Do that for 6 days. Everybody's going to be going, what are you talking about? He's going to ask them to do this. They're like, we're going to attack. You know, you're not going to attack. You're going to do what I say. Do what I say. Okay? And he expects them to do, and I can hear them. Can't you? I can hear them. Day six, I can hear them. Really? We got to go march again? I mean, we've done this for 6 days and nothing's happened. The wall's not even cracking. It's not even rumbling. Maybe it's time we take things into our own hands. Obviously, God doesn't know what he's talking about. We can come up with a better plan. Maybe we need to make a better strategy because it ain't working. Right? Yet by the end of the seventh day, the walls would be completely flat. Israel would be inside and in charge of the city. God expects complete obedience. And that's not a word we like, but it's truth. Okay? And he expects us to obey even when it doesn't make sense. Even when the world disagrees with us, even when your obedience might make you look stupid to somebody else, and even when you don't understand it or you don't want to do it, God still expects you to do it. I can tell you this, man, when I was a kid, 5, 6, 7 years old, my mama would tell me, I need go do so and so, right? Go do whatever. And there was a word that if it came out of my mouth would get slapped right back out. You know what that word was? Why? You didn't say why. He didn't say why. Mama said do it. You did it. Didn't matter if I understood why. Didn't matter if I had the rationale. Didn't matter if I got it all. No, it was obedience. And she was teaching me a valuable lesson. You don't have to understand why I'm telling you to do what you have to do, but you do have to do what I'm telling you to do. Okay? And Lord, how I wish our kids and this culture today could understand. Lord, I wish the parents today could understand that their kids aren't in charge of their homes. The parents are. When did parents stop being parents? Parents don't tell you where you go. I mean, kids don't tell you where to go and what activities you're going to be involved in and whether or not you're going to go to church or whether or not you're going to go to Devo or whether or not you're going to Wednesday night. That's not the kids' call. It's your parents' call. It's your grandparents' call. Why? Because it's called obedience. And let me tell you something, parents, if you're not teaching your kids to obey, you're teaching them also not to obey God. It's that important. It's that important. I'm not telling you to be mean, but I'm telling you to teach them that obedience is critical and you don't have to explain everything. You just need to be able to say why. Why? Because they're going to come, I don't understand this baptism thing. It doesn't make sense to me. Why does getting in water have anything to do with my salvation? Number one, because God said so. We can get into theology all day if you want to, but understand the number one reason to do it is because God said to. Pure and simple. Doesn't matter if you don't agree with it. Doesn't matter if you think it makes you look stupid. Doesn't matter if you don't like water or you don't want to get wet or you're afraid of drowning. No, all that's irrelevant. Doesn't matter what you think. It matters what God said. And that's where we got to get to. Obedience is key. Israel didn't just sit back. Remember what we talked about last week, John 14, 15? If you love me, keep my commandments. Understand what it says to God when we disobey. God, I don't love you, but I got this really big problem in my life. Would you please intervene and fix it? That's what we're saying. That's what we're doing. When we don't obey God and we live outside of His will, and then we come to God asking for His blessing. God, I don't love you, but fix me. Does that make sense? Doesn't to me. The last thing, really quickly. I'm going to run through these fast. Faith. The passage that Michael read, which, by the way, did y'all notice today was the Michael Carson Day? I was going to say, you might as well preach too, buddy. I mean, you did the scripture reading, the prayer, Lord's Supper. Yeah, next time you're preaching. All right. Faith. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 30 reminds us, by faith, the walls of Jericho fell down after they were encircled for days. Faith. And there's so many people in our world today, especially in a religious world, that want to equate faith with belief. They're the same. That all you got to do is believe. If that's true, Satan's in heaven. Because I guarantee you this, he believes in Jesus. The demons that were cast out believe in Jesus. Okay? Faith is belief that is acted upon. Faith, as James would tell us, is an action. It's not just a belief, okay? I want to look at these, run through real quick. We see this played out in Israel. Matter of fact, the Hebrew writer, which I think is Paul, tells us by faith they came down. But their faith was not just simply belief. First, it was a daring faith. Again, like I said, that faith marched around for 6 days in full view of an opposing army who from on high had the advantage. It was not smart for them to walk around the walls of Jericho. Okay? Sure, they had their guys with them, but they're in with the higher ground. Any military guy will tell you they are at an extreme disadvantage. Okay? It took guts for them to do what they did. They also had a doing faith. God didn't just say, well, just sit back and do nothing. I got this. No, they had to get up every day. They had to get out. They had to march. They had to move. James would tell us, you know the words, faith without deeds or works is what? It's dead. It's not faith at all, right? But not only was it daring and not only was it doing, it was also discipline. You remember what Joshua told the people as they marched around? Every day, you get this whole big old crowd of people out and they're marching around the city. And you know what his one words were? His one instruction to the people were what? Don't say a word. I guarantee you there wasn't a group of quilters in that bunch. They would have been doomed. You know what? I'm 6 days without saying a word. Lucille's head would blow up. It just boom to be gone. Right? No, I'm just kidding. Because I guarantee you, what those quilters would do. If God said don't do it, they wouldn't do it. But it took discipline. It took discipline to say, although I want to say something, I'm not going to say anything. See, it takes discipline for you to have faith because there's things in your life that you're going to have to say, man, as much as I want to do something, no, I'm not going to do it because God doesn't want me to. It's also determined day after day after day after day. They did what God said, even when they had no evidence that anything was going on. Day one, nothing happened. Day two, nothing happened. Day three, nothing happened. Day four, nothing happened. Day five, nothing happened. Most of us had already formed a committee to go find a different way to do it because this ain't working. Faith is determined to trust in God. It's also denying. It also says, you know, as much as I want it, I ain't going to get it. God says, when you go in, don't take anything for yourself. And all of Israel Save one. Didn't take anything. That's a whole nother lesson about Achan. And how one guy who didn't deny himself caused a calamity to come on an entire nation. That, again, that's a whole different story. But there's also a dependent faith. And it says this, that although Israel was completely enthralled and completely wrapped up in the promises of God, and they heard God say, be of good courage and be courageous and don't fear. They knew that and they believed that, or they wouldn't have marched. And although they were obedient and they did what God asked them to do, and they did it how God asked them to do it, and they had faith, but still that faith was dependent upon God to move. And let me tell you something, church, wherever you are today, whatever problem is looming in front of you and it seems like this humongous wall that you can't get through and you can't get over it and you can't knock it down, then I would tell you the same exact thing. Trust in the very presence of God in your life. Be of courage. Do not fear. He will be with you. And you've all seen it on Facebook. Sometimes God calms the storm. Sometimes he just rides in the boat with you until the storm's over. I'm going to promise you it's all going to be better. What I am going to promise you is that you're not alone in it, that God is with you. But secondly, also understand this. Trust in that, but also ask yourself, am I centered in the will of God? Am I living in obedience to what he wants for me and in my life? Because if you're not, that's your first step of fixing anything. It comes to repentance. Say, God, I want to center myself back in your will. Okay? But lastly, have faith. Not a faith that just sits back, a faith that moves, a faith that believes, a faith that denies, is disciplined, is determined, is daring, is doing, but ultimately is dependent upon God. And see if your wall doesn't start at least moving a little bit. This morning, I don't know where you are. Maybe you need the prayers of this church. Maybe repentance is your first step that you need to go down to get that wall down. Maybe you just need encouragement from us. Maybe you need to respond to the gospel of Jesus Christ. Put him on in baptism. I know you don't understand it. You don't have to understand it. What you have to understand is God said, do it. Pure and simple. If we can help you with anything today, his invitation is yours as we stand, as we sing.